From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm your host, Roger McDonough. Today on the show, we're going to have a conversation with University of Utah professor Paul Larson about his new film, Spirituality for the Uninsured.
One of the images I use in the film about language and the filter is a computer screen, viewing the world through a computer screen, which is kind of what we do with language. In nature, there are moments when something might be so breathtakingly beautiful and overwhelming that language just kind of melts inside us, and we're there in that raw moment with what's going on around us. We're not thinking about it, we're just experiencing it.
That conversation, your summary of the day's top local headlines, and your Better Utah legislative recap, just ahead on The Rundown. And welcome back to KCPW's news and issues show, The Rundown. Coming up a little bit later on the program, we're going to have a conversation with University of Utah professor Paul Larson about his new film, which examines the many facets of human spirituality. But first up, we have these headlines. A caucus of Utah House Republicans has decided to throw its support behind a measure to move the state prison. The Salt Lake Tribune is reporting that the House Republican caucus voted in favor of the idea on Thursday. Their decision doesn't move the measure forward, but it gives it an influential group of supporters. Republicans vastly outnumber Democrats in the House, which has yet to vote on the measure. The Senate would need to approve it also. State officials have long considered moving the state prison from its location in Draper to free up the real estate for development. Earlier this month, a committee of lawmakers and community leaders voted to recommend the move. An outside consulting firm estimates the net cost to move the prison would be around $100 million. The battle over the Count My Vote initiative came to a head on Thursday. Leaders of the movement spoke out against a related bill at a press conference in the Capitol Rotunda just minutes before that bill was discussed on the Senate floor. KCPW's Ryan Cunningham, who was at the Capitol, breaks down the arguments of both sides of the debate.
Back on Tuesday, Republican Senator Kurt Bramble foresaw some contentious debate on his bill SB 54, so he went ahead and scheduled a specific time for Senate floor discussion, Thursday morning, 11 a.m. The bill's controversy comes from a multitude of opinion on how and whether to change Utah's caucus system. The Count My Vote group has been circulating a petition to put a voter initiative on this year's ballot. The initiative, if passed, would replace the caucuses with what the group argues is a more direct primary-style system. But Bramble's SB 54, the group argues, would negate the initiative before it's even voted on. Anticipating the 11 a.m. reading of SB 54, leaders of Count My Vote spoke in the Capitol Rotunda less than an hour before a Senate floor debate on the bill was to begin. Here's Rich McKeon, executive chair of Count My Vote, voicing the group's opposition to SB 54.
If you read Senate Bill 54, what you find is a bill that is a clever maneuver to circumvent the effect of the people's right to petition the government. This is a constitutional right, not one that should be tampered with. We respectfully ask the legislature to back off on their efforts to affirmatively pass Senate Bill 54.
That clever maneuver McKeon referred to is the key difference between the initiative and SB 54. Senator Bramble's bill includes the exact language of the Count My Vote initiative, even typos and grammatical errors, but it adds a second option for Utah's political parties in case they dislike the Count My Vote proposal. For his part, Bramble doesn't see his bill as a workaround for the initiative, should voters approve it. In fact, he thinks direct primaries wouldn't improve voter participation, a goal of Count My Vote's initiative.
As Vice President of the National Conference of State Legislatures, I've asked NCSL to provide data. And the data is clear that direct primaries don't impact in a material way citizen participation. What impacts citizen participation much greater is competitive races between competing philosophies.
Bramble said his second option for the parties would do a better job of enfranchising unaffiliated voters, something he argued the Count My Vote initiative fails to do. Most senators spoke more or less in favor of SB 54, with one notable exception, Democratic Senator Patricia Jones. She believes the onerous voter initiative process should be allowed to play itself out before the legislature gets involved.
There have been hundreds of people working on this initiative. This is a due process that was given to us. And it's a process, the initiative process is extremely difficult. That was made so by this body, by the legislature. When you have hundreds of people who have worked to gather the signatures and thousands of people who have signed the petition, I think we need to honor those people who have done their due diligence, who have followed the rules carefully.
Jones did agree that the current system isn't working, noting the underrepresentation of women and minorities in elected office in Utah. Jones and Democratic Senator Jim DeBacus ended up being the only two senators to vote against SB 54. The bill will be voted on one more time in the Senate before it heads to the House. From the Capitol, I'm Ryan Cunningham for KCPW News.
Finally today, campus police at the University of Utah are looking for a pair of suspects who tried to kidnap a female student in a parking lot outside a dormitory. Police say the suspects tried to abduct the young woman Tuesday night when she approached a car she thought she recognized outside of Sage Point dorms off of Fort Douglas Boulevard. University Police Sergeant Garth Smith says a man on the passenger side grabbed her before others walking past scared them off. He says they let her go and drove away. Smith said investigators don't believe the attack is related to an assault on campus a month ago, but he is urging students to remain alert, especially at night. He says it's never a good idea to approach an unfamiliar car. That does it for our top local headlines. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. Stay with us. It's time now for our Better Utah legislative recap with Marianne Martindale, Executive Director of the nonprofit Good Government Group Alliance for a Better Utah. Marianne, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So there was some more floor debate over SB 54, which is the sort of count my vote alternative bill. How did that play out?
Right. So we talked a little bit about that, I think, yesterday. This is Senator Bramble's SB 54. It's really an alternative to the count my vote citizen initiative that's moving forward. It sailed through the Senate. There was a lot of debate, but mostly in terms of how great this was going to be opening the primaries, what opportunities it was going to present for people. And it ended up that it essentially really only got two nay votes, Jim DeBacus and Pat Jones, both Democratic senators from the Salt Lake area. It'll have to go through House committee and House floor, but, you know, it was an interesting one. And just prior to this floor debate, the Count My Vote people actually held a press event in the Capitol Rotunda,
right,
talking about all the reasons why this wasn't necessary and why they should allow the citizen initiative petition to just go through and to play out and then see what happens as a result of that.
And I know that former Governor Mike Leavitt testified saying essentially the same thing in a committee a couple of days ago.
Yes, he's one of the big supporters behind the Count My Vote initiative. So there's still a battle waging, and you know, it's hard to say exactly which direction this is going, but the legislature, you know, hasn't seemed particularly interested in opening the way, as it were, for citizen petitions. So that's concerning because the Constitution of the state of Utah actually allows us for the ability to petition our government. But their disagreement is, you know, in this case, is specific to the contents of this petition. But it's still, you know, it's an interesting position to take.
Is there a sense that this effort is to nullify the Count My Vote initiative?
Yeah, essentially it would nullify it because they have the exact same wording in it. And so even if Count My Vote were to pass, that exact same wording would match up to this law. And this law basically says that if the respective parties don't do these four things that are part of this criteria, that then the language of Count My Vote would become the rule of the land.
Okay. And you can hear about that in our discussion from yesterday.
Right. And there will be more on that.
Of course. Yeah. As the session continues, I'm going to take a bit of a wide turn away from this and ask you about a bill that has to do with alcohol policy, but it's addressing the Zion Curtain. This is by Representative Craig Powell of Heber. And it's kind of the Zion warning.
Yeah, it's a big warning with big air quotes around it.
Of course.
But it's an interesting one because the Zion Curtains comes up every year. So last year, right on the floor of the House, both the Speaker and Ryan Wilcox, who is a representative there, referred to it as weird and
right,
making us look weird as a state that we have this thing. And for people that don't quite understand what it is, it's a 7-by-2-foot barrier that has to be between the people pouring a drink and anyone seeing it if it is a restaurant that's open to everyone. If it's a bar, this is not an issue. In other words, it's protect the children. It's under the guise of if a child watches this being poured, that somehow they will immediately become an alcoholic.
Right. Well, okay. So the idea is to hide both the mixing and the pouring of the alcohol
exactly
behind a partition and then to bring the drinks out mixed.
Right. So ever since that passed 3 years ago, last year and then now again this year, there have been attempts to try to overturn that because, I mean, there's a lot of reasons. First, there's actually no evidence whatsoever that proves it does anything. And there's no evidence in other states that have done this to prove that it does anything to decrease, increase underage alcohol consumption. The second thing, I mean, it's tough on businesses. So you have businesses a couple different ways. You have business that's a chain. They have a very distinct footprint. You know, if you walk into a restaurant that's a chain, they all look the same. There's a reason for that. There's a cost savings associated with that. This puts an added burden on anyone who's trying to build who has to take this into consideration. It's a completely different element than what they're used to building. Also, really small, these little hole-in-the-wall types of little mom-and-pop restaurants, well, they have to figure out where they're going to pour alcohol should they get an alcohol license. Some of them have to go almost like in a back closet or in a employee restroom and pour the alcohol right. to get around this law.
And so Representative Powell's bill is kind of trying to address that. How would that work?
So his idea is that let's take the curtain down, or at least let's make it an option. If a restaurant wants to keep the Zion curtain up, great, fine. If they don't want to keep it up, that what they would do is they would have to post a sign that says, notice, this establishment dispenses and serves alcoholic products in public view.
Wow. This could be an alternative and would probably cost less than building a barrier. We know that the Mormon Church has come out saying that they think Utah's alcohol laws are fine as they are. Does Representative Powell's amendment have a chance?
I think it's slim, frankly. The fact that here we are over halfway through now and it's still stuck in the Rules Committee means they're not excited about getting it out. That doesn't mean it won't come out, but I think it's got an uphill battle.
I have a cousin who has a concept for this where you would have a serving tray with a barrier that you can pull out of the serving tray and mix the drinks behind the barrier.
Brilliant. Brilliant. You can make a lot of money here.
I'm sure, yeah. Well, Marianne, these are fascinating bills that we're following, some of them more comedic than others, but we'll obviously keep in touch with you to find out what's going on. Thanks again for coming in.
Great. Thank you.
This has been our Better Utah Legislative Recap with Marianne Martindale, Executive Director of the nonprofit Good Government Group Alliance for a Better Utah. And now on the program, we're going to turn to a conversation with Paul Larson, associate professor at the University of Utah and the writer and director of the new film Spirituality for the Uninsured. The film will be screened tomorrow evening. That's Friday, February 21st at 7:30 p.m. in the Dumpke Auditorium at the Utah Museum of Fine Arts on the University of Utah campus. Screening is open to the public and free of charge, though a donation of $10 is suggested. The film opens with a man who struggled with drug addiction for 20 years and one transformative experience that I suppose you could say cured his addiction. Larson then poses the question, what is this power that can transform a person in an instant? And uses the film as a vehicle to explore that idea and try to answer that question. Paul Larson, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate your having me here.
So this is a film essay on the role that spirituality plays in helping people access something beyond our comprehension. But let's talk about that comprehension or our lack thereof. You lay out a dichotomy between the rational mind and the experiential mind. And I thought maybe we could start there. Could you describe that dichotomy?
It's one I struggled with in the film to make simple. I studied philosophy in college. And epistemology, the theory of knowledge, how we know what we know. One of the things we look at is language and how that impacts us, having language. And obviously, it allows us to build our world by turning the world into a collection of things and then focusing on those things. And we ask ourselves, what can they do for us and how can we use them? And we've been able to go from a very low level of technology up to a quite high level that we exist with now, and it's all based on our use of language.
Mm-hmm. You make a point about language that it's a barrier to a certain extent as well, because it is the rational mind trying to interpret what we see, and the production of meaning through language is in itself fraught with problems. You've got differences between languages where certain words don't exist when you move through idioms, or gender issues. Maybe you could help us out with the idea of language as a barrier to experience.
Yeah. Well, that's the price we pay for using language. We essentially create a filter between us and our experience of the world. The language interprets and tells us what the world is around us. So we don't have that direct experience going on very often. We're forming ideas in our minds, our heads, as things come in, and those ideas are then structured by our language and by our culture and what our culture tells us those things are. So we don't get a very direct experience after a while at all of what's going on around us. We're experiencing more or less what we've been set up to experience.
I'm going to jump away from that for a second and we'll come back to it. But the film makes a comment on the natural world as a vehicle for direct experience. You talk about your own ancestors in Zion Canyon in the 1860s. Maybe you can talk about how the natural world is a vehicle for that direct experience.
I mean, one of the images I use in the film about language and the filter is a computer screen, viewing the world through a computer screen, which is kind of what we do with language. In nature, there are moments, many of us have had these moments, when something might be so breathtakingly beautiful and overwhelming that language just kind of melts inside us. And we're just there in that raw moment with what's going on around us. We're not thinking about it. We're just experiencing it. And those are great moments of wonder when existence seems to grow. I mean, rationality and technology and science and whatnot has been so successful that we've come to live inside it very much. And we don't even see in what way it blinds us. We don't see in what way it keeps us away from things around us. And it's the success of it that actually has kind of seduced us into that.
Well, and then you describe the success of, I don't know if you would make a distinction between these, but you look at the artistic, the spiritual, the natural. The film does have artists describing their ability to access the sort of present moment through their process. And I'm wondering if presence is actually a key word there, because you do look at the Buddhist tradition, you look at people in meditative states being present, and then the different ways in which that presence is accessed.
Yeah, the presence, I think, is the way to access it. The Buddhists have great methods for that. But in the film, we talk with an artist, a painter, who speaks about in the moments that she's painting, she disappears into it. She doesn't think about anything. She's not calculating what's going on. She's actually just simply going with her feeling or whatever. She disappears into it. And so the arts is actually one access into that experience. It's like nature in that way, that moment. An artist can do that also. So when we speak of spirituality, let me say, first of all, it's bigger than just religious spirituality. There's spirituality all over the place. Religious spirituality is just one of those practices or methods, a very important one. But
let's talk about spirituality for a second. I kind of wonder what constitutes spirituality. I mean, you look at a faith group here in Salt Lake City. I think it's
Risen Life.
Risen Life Church, yeah. You look at that. You look at somebody who has an experience from a Catholic perspective, I think. You have the Buddhist tradition, sweat lodges, for example. What, maybe you can give me a description of what constitutes spirituality. And did making this film change your idea of what spirituality is?
Spirituality is one of those things that you say, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. Because we're actually talking about an experience that is beyond language, although language is used to describe it, but you have to actually experience it. The key word for me for spirituality is connection. If you think of our rational world as creating objects and things around us to be used, the key there is disconnection. It's reconnection, but in an odd relationship of one who uses things. In spirituality, the point is to get beyond that perception of things and to experience the world as a oneness and just to be there in the world. And I would say beyond that, what I say at the end of the film is that the sense is in spirituality that when you go to that space, there's an energy, spirit, or truth that seems to be there with which you can join.
I'm going to get into some more nuts and bolts questions here. When did you decide to make this film, and when did you actually start making it?
Yeah, I started in 2007. You want to know why I made the film?
Yeah.
Okay. I've been a volunteer for 10 years in youth corrections, and I have assisted a Eastern Cherokee man do sweat lodges, which is a Native American prayer ceremony. They're physically very demanding and difficult. And these young people would come who are in trouble with the law, and they would have 2 or 3 hours inside a very hot, dark, enclosed space, claustrophobic. They were encouraged, instead of going to their place of fear, where any sane person would go in such a place, to actually communicate with the Creator. And they could interpret that any way they wanted to, define that any way they wanted to, but kind of go to the source of existence and talk about their lives.
And this was seen as therapy. I mean, this is used by, I can't remember which correctional group, but it's used as therapy, and it is something that affects these kids in a positive way.
Yeah. Some of those kids would come out of there and say, what was that? That was the greatest feeling I've ever had in my life. And it was a wonderful feeling, and it made me see the world differently and feel differently, and I don't want to do the things I've been doing. So that was a primary motivation in making the film. I teach at the university. I have students, some of them in the same sort of dark space that these kids in corrections are in, that are emotionally struggling in the world to get a hold of anything that'll give them a sense of solidity. And many of them have given up on the idea of spirituality or religion or something like that, which I can understand. I did too earlier in my life. And I wanted to make a film, actually, to tell them that, yes, a lot of the stuff you think is terrible about religion is terrible about religion. However, there is, at the core of it, something that might be helpful to you.
And I wonder if the film is advocating for people to get out there and say, hey, look, give spirituality a chance.
Encourage is a tough word for me.
All right.
But I'd like to educate people. And let them know, look, this is there. You know, it's like if you're struggling, know that there are some things, some resources. You know, that man at the very beginning of the film was ready to commit suicide. Mm. He had no idea, you know, that there was anything out there that could help him. And somebody actually called him as he was writing his suicide note and said, I've learned about these religious ceremonies you could go to that might help you. And but he had no idea that existed. He went, and he had this remarkable experience that changed his life. I'd like to tell somebody that I know those things exist. Whether they want to actually explore that, that's totally up to them. So encourage is a hard word for me, but it can turn everything around in a moment. You know, I have several of those people in the film that happened for. It may be small moments, but I saw it with kids in corrections who just were totally overwhelmed by what had happened in there and saying, I've seen it. I've seen, you know, what this world can be, what this life can be for me. You know, it gives them the path, a vision to follow. And so I just want to let people know that is there.
You know, you mentioned your agnosticism, that for many years in your life you were agnostic. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was raised religiously, but at some point in my life that wasn't working for me, and I threw it off and just considered myself agnostic. And that went on for a number of years, but ultimately my life went into a crisis period, and I had nothing there in my belief structure, in that agnostic belief structure that actually helped, that helped me get out of it. And I just went deeper and deeper and deeper down into it, and it got very dark. It was at that point, desperate enough, and believe me, it took some desperation to get me to this point, that I actually turned back to some of the spiritual concepts I'd been taught when I was young. I did this all on my own. I didn't go to any group or anything like that. But I just started to engage on that level, and I actually felt better. I actually prayed and felt like somebody was listening to me. And that was a huge thing for me at that moment, because I felt very isolated. Even though I had a loving family around me and people, friends and whatnot, I felt incredibly isolated. That experience hit me on that level and encouraged me. I began to look and read and do things bit by bit that re-engaged me in a spiritual path that took me into different things, lots of different things. And I'm an eclectic. The film shows two different types of Buddhism, one type of Christianity, and Native American. And I practice all of those because all of those help me. And there's no reason they have to be exclusive because they all bring something to the table. So for me, it's enriched my life. And that's my criteria ultimately for truth on this, as opposed to rationality, is that does it enrich your life in some way and does it broaden your horizon? Can you feel, you know, the world stretching out, your vision of being expanding? And if it is, then you're probably onto something good.
Well, all right. Paul Larson, I want to thank you for coming in and speaking with us.
Thank you for having me here.
Great. And again, that was Paul Larson, associate professor at the University of Utah. He's the author and director of a new film, Spirituality for the Uninsured, which will be shown tomorrow night at the Dumke Auditorium in the Utah Museum of Fine Arts on the University of Utah campus. The screening is free and open to the public and begins at 7:30 p.m. You can find this interview and all of our past conversations at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. And thanks once more for tuning in to The Rundown here on KCPW. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis, Ryan Cunningham, and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Join us each weekday at 5 for an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.